Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast. The winner takes it all. Edition as the 31-year wait is over, and the weight of 8 straight playoff losses has been lifted as the Bengals advance to the second round of the playoffs with a 26-19 win over the Raiders. Coming up, you'll hear radio replays, post-game comments, and analysis from my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Then, in this week's Fun Facts segment, you'll get to know wide receiver slash return specialist Trent Taylor. The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Ultimate Bengals, the free-to-play next-level fantasy football game. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. It's the greatest thing since delivering game balls to fans. Following the game, Zach Taylor announced the start of a new tradition. Following playoff wins, the Bengals will drop off game balls at bars around the city so that fans can hold them, take pictures with them, etc. On Saturday night, balls were dropped off at Pontiac and Over the Rhine, Walt's Hitching Post in Northern Kentucky, and Mount Lookout Tavern. You can find footage of Zach and Kevin Huber dropping off a ball at MLT's on Twitter. It was the perfect way to say thank you to the record crowd that filled the jungle on Saturday. It was loud enough at times to wake the dead. Now, let's get to the game. The Raiders got the ball first and immediately scored as a 47-yard field goal by Daniel Carlson made it 3-0. But the Bengals answered with a 10-play, 75-yard drive.
Burrow screens it to Mixon. Nice. Charging to the 30. Nice. Numerals to the 20. 15. Down nice. To the 10. Joe Mixon, 21 yards on the screen. And it's first and goal.
3 plays later, the Bengals took a lead they never relinquished.
Burrow catches a shotgun snap, drops back, guns it into the end zone.
Baby,
into a thicket
baby, yes.
where it's caught
yes.
for the touchdown.
Yes. Nice.
C.J. Uzama in the middle of defenders, hauling in that line drive throw from Joe Burrow.
And C.J. Uzama basically acting like a power forward. He's boxing people out.
Uzama followed his touchdown by combining the icky shuffle with Jamar Chase's gritty dance.
Well, I knew that Icky Woods would be the ruler of the jungle, and I was like, oh, nice, I'll just do the icky shuffle. And I was talking to one of my boys, and I was like, yo, if I score, I'm going to do the icky into the gritty. And he said, not if, when. And I was like, all right, bet. I probably should have practiced for sure, because that was not well done. But, hey, got in the end zone. Screw it.
The Bengals had a 7-3 lead, and roughly 2 minutes later, the defense got the ball back.
Carr stomps the right foot. Catches a chest-high snap, drops back 7 steps, hit from
the
behind.
Ball's out, ball's
the ball
out.
Comes out,
woo!
Scooped up by
nice.
Ogunjobi.
Nice.
Hendrickson
nice.
With a strip sack,
yes.
and the Bengals will take over at the 15 of Las Vegas.
The Bengals drove to the 8 before settling for a field goal in a 10-3 lead. Hendrickson's sack led to 3 points, and on the first play of the second quarter, Sam Hubbard almost added 2 more.
Carr back to throw from the goal
finish.
Line.
Yeah!
Sack! He's brought
yeah!
down!
Safety!
They're going to say
oh,
he was just man. Outside of the end zone
man.
By a half a yard. Carr was eventually brought down in the end zone by Hill and Hubbard, but when contact was made, he was just past the goal line.
The Raiders had to punt from the back of their end zone, giving the Bengals a great drive start at the Las Vegas 45. A 28-yard pass to Jamar Chase helped them drive to the 4, but the Bengals stalled in the red zone again.
Burrow waits at the 9, catches the shotgun snap, pump fakes, in trouble. Burrow spun to the ground, and then 2 Raiders jump on top of him after that. The sack goes back to the 12-yard line. Burrow hops up, trots toward the sideline. Max Crosby got to him first.
Well, 1-for-3 now in the red zone.
Evan McPherson's field goal made it 13-3. The Raiders answered with a field goal to pull back within 7, and the Bengals came back with their best drive of the day, an 82-yard march
that included a great call on fourth and one.
The ball is on the left hash. Now Burrow moves under center. Chase motions into the backfield. They toss it to Ja'Marr Chase.
Nice.
Running to the 25, the 20, the 15. He's taken out of bounds. A creative play design as Chase motions into the backfield and carries like a running back to convert on fourth and one.
Why not? He's spectacular in space.
It was another brilliant performance by numero uno. 9 catches for 116 yards. And 3 runs for 23 more.
I haven't played running back in a long time, but you know they're giving me those tosses, getting my speed to the outside. I'm getting hit by linebackers, so I'm knowing how hits feel again. But you know it's cool as long as I can make a play with the ball in my hands.
That 15-yard run on fourth down led to the Bengals' second touchdown.
Joe Burrow is ready. Hopkins snaps it back. Burrow drops back to throw, looking, rolling out to the right, still looking downfield. Burrow throws it toward the back of the end zone. Boyd leaps. He makes the catch.
Unreal.
Did Burrow stay in bounds when he threw it? The officials are talking about it on the Bengals sideline.
Joe
Burrow holding up his arm, signaling touchdown, and the officials are going to have a lengthy discussion to see if Joe got the ball out of his hands before stepping out of bounds.
They should call it a touchdown.
It's ruled a touchdown.
Yeah, then it's automatically reviewed. Call it a touchdown, then they automatically review it. Nope. I don't understand. Why the delay?
Here's why. The real issue wasn't whether Burrow was still in bounds. It was whether the play should have been blown dead by an inadvertent whistle. NFL Senior VP of Officiating, Walt Anderson, told Pool reporter Paul Daner Jr. after the game that the officials on the field determined that the whistle came after Boyd's touchdown catch. That wasn't the case. If you listen closely to replays, you can hear the whistle just before Boyd caught it. Fortunately for the Bengals, that decision cannot be reversed on replay. Having said that, the whistle had nothing to do with a fantastic play by Burrow.
Yeah, that's what you expect from the number one pick in the draft, is plays like that, plays you can't explain, making a play when there's no play to be made. That's a phrase I've heard often in my career, and Joe Burrow's the kind of guy that can make those types of plays, and it's pretty impressive.
The Bengals were up by 2 touchdowns, but as the Raiders demonstrated by winning 4 straight have-to-have-it games at the end of the year, they're hard to kill.
Carr dropping back to pass.
Uh-oh.
Fires into the end zone. Zay Jones pulls it down for a touchdown with 13 seconds left in the half.
The Bengals took a knee to end the half. Their only drive in the first 2 quarters where they didn't score, and yet they were only up by 7. Cincinnati got the ball to begin the third and drove far enough to add 3 points and another McPherson field goal. Those were the only points of the third quarter as the Bengals took a 23-13 lead to the fourth. The Raiders cut into it on Daniel Carlson's third field goal of the game to make it 23-16. But after punting on their previous drive for the first time all day, the Bengals answered with a 7.5-minute march all the way down to the Raiders' 10. On fourth and one, they lined up to go for it before calling timeout and attempting a field goal.
Huber catches, puts it down. McPherson's kick on its way, and good!
Wow.
The Bengals lead by 10 with 6 minutes and 46 seconds remaining.
The red zone has been the twilight zone for the Bengals. Another field goal they settled for. 2 touchdowns, 3 field goals. Not good enough.
It was just tough. Tough for me to find a rhythm there, to be quite honest with you, to get us into the best stuff. And you know, disappointing because we scored on our first 5 drives of the game, but like you said, it didn't feel like we had enough points on the board. And I just put that on more on me, just finding a better rhythm there in the low red zone.
With 4.5 minutes left, the Bengals defense had a chance to basically put the game away.
Fourth down and 5 for the Raiders. Carr in the shotgun. Richard to his left. 3 receivers left, 1 right. Carr back to throw on 4th and 5. Has time.
Oh.
Throws. Jackson with a catch at the Cincinnati 33. And he sprints out of bounds at the 30 to stop the clock with a 4th and 5 conversion.
That led to a field goal that made it a 7-point game. The Bengals offense could not put the game away as they failed to get a first down and punted it back to the Raiders with 1:51 to go. Zach Taylor says he was confident that his defense would come through.
I promise you, my heart rate was as even as could be, just because I trusted our players. I knew that someone was going to step up and win that game for us, and wasn't surprised when it happened.
He was right, and the player who stepped up was Jermaine Pratt.
Fourth down and goal from the 9. 17 seconds to go. The play clock at 3. Shotgun snap. Carr throws into traffic. Intercepted. Jermaine Pratt has the football. Coffin nails.
Bam, bam, bam. How about that? It ends on a turnover.
Here's Pratt on making one of the biggest defensive plays in team history.
It means a lot, you know. I got drafted by Zach. You know, we had ups and downs for the past 2 years, and be able to make that play, you know, put a stamp of the first class he drafted ever here at the Bengals. So it was a great opportunity.
I think Jermaine has made a really big step this year. I thought last year was a good step in year two for him. I think this year he's made a tremendous jump, and super reliable for us, and just as consistent as there is.
If Pratt had simply knocked the ball down, the end result would have been the same. After the game, he was asked why an interception means more than a pass deflection.
What you mean, why? You want a turnover. Turnovers win games. I want a pick. I don't want no PBU.
The Bengals were one snap away from a moment that Bengals fans have been waiting for 3 decades.
Joe Burrow takes the snap. He takes a knee. And after 31 years, the drought is over. And guess what? The Joe Burrow era is just beginning.
No doubt about it.
The final score, 26-19. Here are Sam Hubbard, Joe Burrow, and Zach Taylor.
To me personally, you know, it means the world. And never in my lifetime have we had a playoff win. Feel like we broke a curse, but really just looking up at the stands, feeling the city come alive. It's hard to put into words what it means to everybody in the city, and I'm just really happy to be a part of a team that was able to do it, and we got a lot more in store.
I mean, it's exciting, but this was expected. This isn't like the icing on top of the cake or anything. This is the cake, and so we're moving on.
Happy for the city. I think the city can finally exhale. I get that. We haven't felt that pressure, I'll be quite honest. Me, maybe more so than the players, because I'm out and about more in the offseason and talk to people who've been here a long time, but I don't think the players ever felt that. So I'm just really, really happy for the city of Cincinnati and that they get a chance to enjoy this and now just exhale and enjoy the ride here, because we're not done yet.
And when it came to handing out game balls, Zach gave one to the man who gave him the opportunity to be an NFL head coach.
2 game balls. The first one is to Mike Brown, you know, just because there's nobody who's more passionate about this team, this organization. There's no owner that sits at every walkthrough and every single practice in the freezing cold, the rain, the snow. This means the world to him. And I think, you know, some of the players know him better than others. The coaches, myself, we just owe so much to that man for being patient with us. I personally, if I coached at any other organization in football, I probably wouldn't be here right now in the third year. That's the truth. But he's got the experience and the understanding. And because he's around, and because Paul and Katie and Troy and Caroline and Elizabeth, they care so much and they're around, that they get a chance to hear your vision firsthand on a daily basis. So we're all on the same page. There's no miscommunication. They can see where we need to go, and we're going to get there. And I think that they just believe in these players and coaches. And so he was very deserving of that. The second one is to the city of Cincinnati. You know, we want to start new traditions here with playoff wins, where we give game balls to this city and let the fans enjoy it, take selfies with it, whatever it is. We'll figure out how we're going to do that, disperse these things around where people are at their greatest moments tonight and get a chance to enjoy these balls with us. Because I told this to the players. Some of them may not understand the significance of what happened today, but I know a lot of you in the room who are homegrown Cincinnatians certainly do. And like I said earlier, I think this city can finally exhale and just enjoy this team for what it is and take that pressure off those last 31 years. And at the same time, there's just such an incredible history here at Cincinnati. There's Super Bowl appearances. There's conference championships. And really, these last even 2 decades, there's been so many tremendous players, teams, and coaches that have come through here that I hope that they feel like they're a part of this win today and they can enjoy this, because they've really allowed the foundation for us to do this. And you know, I think that's today was significant for a lot of people.
Up next, a road game at one of two places. If Kansas City beats Pittsburgh on Sunday night, the Bengals head to top-seeded Tennessee. If the Steelers somehow manage to upset the Chiefs, the Bengals head to Buffalo. The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Ultimate Bengals, the free-to-play fantasy football game. Throughout this year, Ultimate Bengals awarded a weekly winner during the course of the season with tickets, autographed merchandise, and money-can't-buy experiences all up for grabs. Find Ultimate Bengals in the App Store and Google Play. Now, time for post-game analysis with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Lap, the drought is over. We've got at least another playoff game to call next week. Can't wait for that, wherever it turns out to be. What was your biggest takeaway today? What do you think ultimately allowed the Bengals to win this game?
I just think the intestinal fortitude. I thought both teams fought their tails off. You know, I mean, I got a lot of respect for the Raiders. They just won't quit. They're like a virus. They won't go away, man. It's unbelievable. And the Bengals had their hands full with them. But I think the playing at Paul Brown Stadium was huge. Mm-hmm. That's a big advantage. The crowd really helped the Bengals win that football game. There was no two ways about it. I really respect what the defense did. They were on fumes. They were gassed. And to hold the Raiders, who are a very explosive offensive football team, to 35 points in two football games, 16 points mm-hmm. during the regular season, 19 in the playoffs, to hold them in two games to under 20 points, I think it's a hell of an accomplishment. I really do. I think defensively, they should take a big bow.
Agreed. Joe Burrow's vibe after the game was amazing to me. He's got the sunglasses on, and, I mean, you would have thought that this was a week two win. I mean, he's just like, yeah, it's exciting, but we've got bigger fish to fry. It's incredible.
His expectations are like, this is what I thought would happen. Mm-hmm. I'm not the least bit surprised. You know, I'm glad everybody's happy, and I'm glad everybody's thrilled about it. But this is what I've signed up to do. This is what I'm here for. He is amazing. He really is. You talk about a guy that never gets too high and never gets too low. That's what every coach and player strives for, is that consistency of personality where you know exactly your teammates, your coaches know exactly what they can expect out of you. It's not like here 1 week, down here the other week, both emotionally, mentally, physically with your performance. He is just straight flatline at a very high level. He's not flatline at mediocrity. He is flatline at an extremely high level. And for him to reach that and stay at that level for as often as he does, for as long as he does, is unbelievably remarkable. I mean, it just shows me the laser focus, the attention to detail. He's a great example of hard work pays off. This guy takes no shortcuts. He goes the long way in terms of preparation every single week, and it always pays dividends for him.
I hate to bang on Andy Dalton because I respect him and I admire him, but he played in four playoff games and never played well in any of them. One touchdown pass, six interceptions, a passer rating in the 50s. In his first playoff game, Burrow, two touchdown passes, no picks, passer rating of 110.4. That heartbeat that never rises just shows in those clutch moments for Joe Burrow.
It does. And when there are plays that have to be made to win the football game, like the play he made to Tyler Boyd, incredible. I mean, incredible. Extending, creating, you know, just before he steps out of bounds to throw it the way he threw it, where he puts it. To watch he and Ja'Marr Chase, it's like watching Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. It's like watching an unbelievable team, you know, that just they know every move the other one's going to make, the subtleties, you know, of the whole thing, the nuances. It's just remarkable. And that comes with a lot of hard work, too. In the presser, after the game, Ja'Marr Chase said, well, we've thrown that at least 1,000 times. I mean, there's no substitute for hard work, you know. Repetition breeds comfort level and excellence of performance, and those guys are great examples of that.
Defensively, it comes down to the final play of the game. Fourth and goal from the 9, and Jermaine Pratt steps up and makes that interception, a play that will go down as one of the most memorable defensive plays in franchise history.
And that's why he intercepted it, instead of knock it down. I don't want PBUs. I want interceptions. And, I mean, he made such a great play. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, why not? Just pick that bad boy off, you know, and he's really come on and developed. I mean, where would they have been without Jermaine Pratt when Logan Wilson went down? I mean, Jermaine Pratt stepped up and expanded his role and did it in a very, very convincing way. It wasn't too big for him. There's no doubt about that. He's a player, and, you know, he talks about it every week. His teammates talk about the fact that he talks about it. It's all about the football. And he's always trying to rip it out in fumble drills, and he's always trying to, you know, intercept undercut routes and make plays and play the proper angles. And he's trying to get his doctorate in football geometry. I mean, I think he's really smart. He really plays great angles. He understands leverage. That was perfectly leveraged, that interception that he made. It really was.
How'd you feel the O-line did?
I thought pretty well. Mm-hmm. I really did. I mean, I think there were, you know, a couple of sacks Joe took. He knew he had nowhere to go with the football, and he just, you know, kind of like assumed the fetal position almost and covered up and just took the sack. Didn't want to take a chance on putting the ball in jeopardy. And now he's, what, almost 170 or over 170 attempts now without an interception. And, you know, that's something that an offensive line can live vicariously through, the fact that, you know, he's a great player, and he is the biggest reason that that's the case, but you've contributed to it. And I thought that these guys are great. I mean, particularly Crosby. Crosby's unbelievable to watch that guy. Like I talked about earlier, he's Gumby. That's got, you know, Inspector Gadget arms that can bench 400 pounds. I mean, everybody talks about these genetic freaks at the skill position. He's a genetic freak at his position, and he's very, very difficult to get good contact on and sustain good contact on. He's so slippery, so smooth. He's very, very gifted. And, you know, Prince, he had a couple of bad snaps. Everybody's going to against this guy. But I thought overall, I thought he and Jonah Williams hung in there and played pretty darn well.
The Bengals have had remarkably good fortune this year when it comes to injuries. 20 of the 22 guys on offense and defense that started on opening day started this game. Everybody but the right guard and the right tackle. But, as is often the case, they went down. Some really good players went down in this game. Larry Ogunjobi, first and foremost, taken off on a cart. Trey Hendrickson checked out for a concussion. Which of these injuries concerned you the most going forward?
Larry Ogunjobi, you know, looks like it's going to be, I mean, the way it looked, his reaction was the thing that got me. It wasn't just like, oh, I sprained my foot or my ankle. He threw his helmet in disgust. He was very upset. To me, he knew that something bad happened, like an Achilles snapping. Mm-hmm. So that's extremely unfortunate. So I think he's probably obviously gone if that's the case. He's not going to be able to participate anymore. That's a major blow because he is a force inside, you know, pressure in the quarterback's face. He really does a good job of pushing the interior of the pocket. Hopefully Trey Hendrickson will get out of concussion protocol and be able to play in the next football game, and they really need him on the edge as well. And I admire what the defensive line did. I mean, they were down to, you know, nobody. They had to take a bunch of snaps. And Sam Hubbard and others talked about how it was tough. You know, they were gassed down the stretch, and they were just trying to keep him in the pocket as much as anything. Just don't let him – because Carr hurt him a little bit with his feet, you know, running and creating and made some big conversions on third down, you know, running the football as well. So, yeah, it's you know, once you get in the playoffs, it's like anything, Dan. It's like turnovers come in bunches. Unfortunately, injuries come in bunches as well. But in my mind, it gave total verification of what Zach and the organization decided to do in Cleveland. Don't take a chance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you look at this game. All these guys go down in one game, and a couple of guys went down up in the Cleveland game too. So, man, do what they did. And that's the reason they won this football game. A lot of guys came into this game a lot healthier than they would have otherwise.
So it was interesting watching C.J. Uzomah do his post-game news conference when it was done and the last question had been asked. He made a point of expressing his admiration and respect for Zach Taylor, even though he was not asked about it.
I think that's big. C.J. gets it.
Mm-hmm.
He gets it on so many levels. I mean, huge leader, very intelligent, understands, you know, team philosophy, understands people. I mean, he's a special dude, and I'm sure Zach Taylor is going to feel, you know, very proud when he hears what CJ did, because like you said, totally unsolicited, and it just goes to show though that this football team, like I've said many times, Dick LeBeau was my first really great example of it. His players in the secondary not only respected him, they loved him, adored him, worshipped him, and it just brought them, everybody. I mean, the relationship back and forth between coach and player raised their level of performance, and, you know, because they weren't just playing for themselves. They were playing for Dick LeBeau. They were playing for their teammates. They were playing for a bunch of things, and that's kind of what Zach's got going now. He's got a lot of guys in his corner for sure.
I'm happy for Zach. I'm happy for every coach. I'm happy for the players. I'm happy for Mike Brown and his family. But most of all, I am happy for Bengals fans. I think we were reminded today, Lap, of just how great this city will support the Bengals when they play the way they did today and play the way they have this year.
Absolutely. I mean, biggest crowd ever, Paul Brown Stadium, over 66,000, and they were boisterous, mm-hmm. full throat. I mean, they were into it. From Jump Street, they were into it. And it caused false starts penalties. It caused lack of communication, being on the same page. It was massive. I'd say I can think of at least a half a dozen plays where the crowd noise was instrumental as the 12th man on defense that caused the Raiders' offense serious problems in terms of being able to relay information up and down the line of scrimmage, being able to hear an audible, being able to hear a guard and a tackle changing their blocking call. I mean, all that stuff, when you can't hear and it all has to be done by signal or by nod or wink or whatever, man, that's you start to feel what unfortunately deaf people have to deal with every day. It's hard, man. It's hard. And that was a big plus for him. I think playing at Paul Brown Stadium actually won him that football game.
There's going to be a lot of alcohol consumed tonight.
There's going to be everybody's going to exceed their limit, and curfew is going to be broken. There is no curfew tonight for everybody. Everybody's going to party hard, and it's well earned. I feel very, very happy for this football team. What they've done is well earned and even more well deserved.
For more on the win and a look ahead to what's next, join Lap and me for Bengals Line Monday night from 6 to 9 on 700 WLW. Now time for this week's fun facts segment, and my guest is the shortest player on the Bengals roster. Time for some fun facts with wide receiver Trent Taylor from Shreveport, Louisiana, in the upper left corner of the state. If you're looking at Louisiana on a map, not far from the Texas and Arkansas borders. Trent, tell us a little bit about where you grew up and some of the things you enjoyed doing when you were young.
I grew up in Shreveport. I actually moved there when I was in second grade. I was born in Tennessee, then moved down to Shreveport when I was in second grade. And got very acquainted with the Louisiana culture, fell in love with crawfish and gumbo and all that kind of stuff. And I went to high school there, went to Louisiana Tech, which is about an hour away. So, spent most of my life in Louisiana.
And you are a football family, from what I can tell. Your dad played college football at Western Kentucky. He's an author and a motivational speaker. Tell me a little bit about him and the impact he had on you becoming a professional athlete.
He had the biggest impact on me. He taught me everything growing up. He was always my coach in all different kinds of sports growing up. And if he wasn't my coach, I was still learning more from him than I was my other coaches. So, he just taught me everything about, how to work, how to compete, how to go get what you want. I learned a lot from just watching him and learning from him. A lot of the credit goes to him for me being where I am today.
We're doing fun facts with Trent Taylor. You are blessed with speed, quickness, great eye-hand coordination, but not height. Were you always one of the smaller kids growing up?
Yeah, I always was. I was always waiting for that moment where I was going to hit my growth spurt. Never really happened, though. So still waiting for it, though. You know, you never know when it could happen.
Never hurts to dream. Did that put a chip on your shoulder?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was, football was always the sport that I loved more than anything. You know, I played every sport growing up, but football was always what I wanted to do. And, you know, in high school, I quit playing baseball, and I got a lot of flack for that from baseball coaches. Like, you know, you're not the type of guy that plays football. You need to be playing baseball type of thing. I heard that from a lot of people. But I just continued to do what I loved and what I wanted to do. And, you know, I kept believing in myself and just kept putting in the work. And luckily I've made it to where I wanted to be. And I mean, I obviously want to do better than where I'm at right now in the NFL, but you know, I came a long ways though, for sure.
How did you wind up at Louisiana Tech?
Yeah, Louisiana Tech was my one offer coming out of high school. You know, I didn't get too much attention just being 5'8". You know, 5'8" white guy, they don't get too much attention. But, you know, I put up a bunch of good stats in high school. Luckily, we threw the ball around a lot. So had a million catches in high school, which helped a lot. So got me one offer. And that one offer was all I needed.
A million catches in high school and in college. As a senior at Louisiana Tech, you led the nation in receiving yards with 1,803. Some of the other top receivers in college football that year included Juju Smith-Schuster, Corey Davis, John Ross. How big of a deal was it for you to lead all of college football in receiving yards?
It was a big deal. I mean, it was a big accomplishment, always something that I wanted to do. Definitely one of my goals that year was to do that. And, you know, luckily we had a great offense at Louisiana Tech that gave me plenty of opportunities and, you know, made the most of it. So, I mean, yeah, that's what has given me a good opportunity to try to have a long career in the NFL. And so I'm still out here trying to do that.
We're doing fun facts with Trent Taylor. You were drafted by the 49ers in the fifth round back in 2017. Describe your draft experience.
Yeah, it was great. I remember, I was sitting there with my family all day long waiting. You know, my mom wanted to throw a draft party and I was kind of hesitant on that. Like, I don't want everyone to be here brokenhearted if I don't get drafted, but sure, we can throw a draft party. But then luckily got a call from San Francisco in the fifth round and talked to John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. And I mean, they were great. I loved being there with them for 4 years. So my time in San Francisco, I enjoyed it out there, but happy to be here in Cincinnati with the Bengals.
You had a really good rookie year with 43 catches, including 27 on third down that led all NFL rookies that year. You had a solid second season despite back surgery before that year. And then year three, unfortunately, was something of a nightmare because of a foot injury and an infection in your foot. Describe that ordeal.
That whole road in my NFL career has been tough. Just to watch me have some success my rookie season. And to think I was going to just, I thought that was, you know, that was the bottom, you know, the platform that I was going to build off of. And then back surgery happened. And then the foot surgery was something that was supposed to just keep me out for like 2 or 3 games. And then, the screw in my foot was a little messed up. We had to go and redo it. And once we redid it, the infection happened at that point. And then, so I ended up missing the entire season that year, just going foot surgery after foot surgery. And five surgeries later, it was finally over with, but then season was over at that point. So, it was a lot to deal with and a lot that I had to try to build my body back from. So I feel good with where I'm at right now. I feel like I'm continuing to get faster and get back to where I used to be. So now I'm just kind of waiting on that opportunity to go out there and prove it.
The 49ers made the Super Bowl that year. I'm sure you were thrilled for your teammates and coaches, but did that make your personal situation even tougher?
Yeah, way tougher. Honestly, it was an emotional day at the Super Bowl. Just to like be in that atmosphere to see how big of a stage it was. And the fact that I couldn't play was because some doctors messed up my foot. It just didn't sit right with me at all. So it was, I mean, it was a time I'll always remember, a day that I'll always remember, just the way that I felt being out there watching it from the sidelines and, you know, watching our team lose in the fourth quarter the way that we did. Something that will always motivate me and always, I'll always remember.
Here's hoping you get to participate healthy the next time around. You joined the Bengals this year as a free agent. You were promoted to the active roster for the Denver game. And afterward, you tweeted about how great it felt to be back out there. What is it about football that you love so much?
Man, it was a feeling that I kind of forgot about because it felt like I haven't really been on the field in so long. But I mean, that's that type of feeling that you get being out there on the football field is something that I don't think you can find anywhere else on this earth. It's that adrenaline rush that's just unmatched. And it's the reason why when people leave the game, it's so hard for them, because to match that adrenaline rush somewhere else is extremely hard to do. And just being in front of so many people, and because like I was doing the opening kickoff for the Denver game, and that's when it's like the loudest. And man, that's just such a cool experience to be out there in the middle of the field when the crowd's roaring. I mean, those moments are the reason why you do it. So it was an awesome time.
A few wild card categories to wrap things up. Who is your all-time favorite athlete in any sport and why?
I was thinking football and I instantly thought of Barry Sanders, just like watching him run and move and juke people out. That was always so much fun to watch. But then I also think of guys like Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, just the way that their mentality was going into the game, the way that they prepared every single day. That kind of stuff was just unmatched, and you know, something that I strive for. Some guys that I strive to be like, because they loved the game unlike anyone else, and they were willing to do whatever it took to continue to play at a high level for as long as they could. And you know, that's the kind of mentality that I try to take in my game as well.
What do you like to splurge on?
I like vacations. I remember I always said, like they asked me in an interview in the NFL draft, what's the first big thing that I'm going to spend my money on? I always said a boat. I always like going on the lake, hanging with my friends on the lake. But I haven't bought a boat yet. Maybe we'll get there one day. But yeah, I would say vacations. I like taking nice vacations.
All right. Last thing, and I'll let you go. This is kind of deep. If you could meet anybody in history, athlete, actor, statesman, politician, religious figure, whoever it might be, who would that person be?
I mean, Jesus comes to mind. Does Jesus count? I mean,
absolutely.
That's an easy one right there. Yeah, I mean, I got plenty of questions for him. I got a whole list of them. So,
beginning with, why couldn't I have been 6'5"?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's number one on the list. Yeah.
Trent, you're off the hot seat. I appreciate your time. Best of luck the rest of the year.
I appreciate you.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Ultimate Bengals, the free-to-play next-level fantasy football game. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play. And if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to this podcast. And if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find us. I'm Dan Hoard, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.